On the line with us now are a couple of folks who co-authored a book called Competition Overdose. Maurice Stuckey and Ariel Ezrachi are joining us today on Robin Hood Radio. Maurice and Ariel, welcome to Robin Hood Radio, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You know, I've worked in radio. I'm 67 years old, and I've worked in radio since I've been 17. And when I first saw this book and looked at the book, it's so interesting because working in small market radio and then eventually ending up with the Jill Goodman operating a nonprofit radio station, we view competition in broadcasting in a far different way than it's grown into. Competition used to be competition, but small competition is now totally different than the competition that has overwhelmed us worldwide. Is that one of the reasons why you both got together and wrote a book like this?
It is. So Ariel started a competition institute in Oxford, and I started out actually doing media mergers at the Department of Justice Antitrust Division. And we both have taught competition law to our students, and we both have been in this field for over 25 years each. But what we've noticed is that the competition that we're seeing around us is not always good. In fact, what we find increasingly we're in this rat race where we seem to be serving competition rather than competition serving us. So then that led us to the question, is competition always good? And is competition always the right remedy? And is it being now overprescribed? And that's what we explore in our book.
Now, Ariel, I tend to look at competition, I think like everything else in life, over the course of a long period of time, and like I said, I've been in broadcasting for 50 years, the meaning of competition to me has totally changed from when I was first introduced to it as a young broadcaster and then really as a young program manager, where competition now to me, the problem with competition is it actually hurts. It hurts more than it helps. Is this something that you found out in your research?
Yes, and in many ways, that's the point we're trying to make in the book, that competition is like medicine. It is something that has to be administered at the right dose. So if you do it right, then this is what is attributed to with all the benefits that we have around us. So we certainly benefit from competition to some extent. But what we show, and we use many examples from a range of industries, we show that once you fail to appreciate that you can overdose in competition, then all of us feel the toxicity of the competitive process. And what we do in the book is we highlight that there are different types of competition. There is positive sum competition, there is negative sum competition, there is competition that can become toxic, and there is competition that can actually benefit us. And we try to give tools both to businesses, to individuals, and to policymakers on how to distinguish and how we as a society can get the most out of the competitive process.
You know, competition is a lot like constructive criticism. There's criticism and there's constructive criticism that works on a broad scale. And then there's competition, and then there's the competition that does work well, like with when I've been in radio, the competition between two radio stations in a town, each competing with one another to do better, to cover more meetings, to be more responsive to the community. But you take competition from something like that and you move it into the big business world, and also now that big business world is basically a world economy. And Maurice, I'll ask you about this first. Is the fact that we are living in a world economy now, does this make the competition overdose even more important?
Yeah, absolutely. So what you describe is what we call noble competition. It's counterintuitive, but it's competition that helps your rivals achieve their full potential, or a mutual striving of excellence. And that is what we, as policymakers, should aim for, that the two radio stations actually benefit, like McEnroe and Beyond Bork, that they each push themselves to achieve their full potential. with global competition now, what you can often see, and we discussed this in the second overdose, is a race to the bottom, where you see then a degradation in environmental standards. You see child labor. You see unsafe working conditions. And as Ariel can talk about, you see horse meat in your lasagna meals, which the Europeans woke up to.
Now, Ariel, going along on that point, competition on a global basis and by such large companies really seems to be actually the smacking down. It's no longer what you just said. It's the smacking down of other businesses, and it aims more the competition to take and control things and not let competition be a beneficial thing.
Yes. What happened over the time is that we simplified our understanding of competition at the policy level. So what our politicians want is to show us the bottom line of lower prices. And they make a very simple assumption that more competition will deliver lower prices and better welfare to all of us. Whereas, in fact, as Maurice mentioned, the horse meat, for example, in Europe that we had, what really happens is that if you don't understand the competitive process and all you do is increase the competitive pressure with no safeguards, something got to give. The horse meat scandal came about because we had fierce competition between supermarkets. In itself, that's good. But they put pressure on lower prices, and at the same time, they didn't put in place any mechanisms to check adequately for the quality of food. And what happened is that pressure then led these suppliers to try and find a way to stay alive, to stay on the market. And what they have done, they put pressure on their suppliers, and eventually something had to give, and that was quality. And little by little, we start seeing horse meat being channeled into the food chain without, of course, telling anyone. And that was the only way for some producers to stay afloat. So whereas we had the bottom line where we assume, hey, the system is working extremely well, we're getting our lasagna, our hamburgers at a lower price. In fact, we get something completely different. We get something which is of worse quality. And the whole system, in a way, collapsed. And we talk about it, about this, we call it quality degradation, how this can happen across the board. Because when you put too much pressure and you don't put safeguards in place, many times companies will start engaging in practices that are unethical and many times unsafe. We discuss many things from Boeing 737 MAX to other examples of when the competitive pressure is incentivizing directors to make the wrong choices.
You know, it's interesting when you bring up the fact where you're going from restaurants and you're going from meat suppliers and then you're going to like airplane manufacturers, which in this world are extremely competitive and the bidding process and controlling. And this competitive problem exists at so many different layers. I mean, it even exists in our economic systems, in our markets, and our things like that. Would you agree with that, either one of you?
Yeah, what we try to bring out is that how it could affect us even on a personal level. So our first overdose involves, you know, a race to the bottom, and we use the college admissions process. So if anyone who has a child that, you know, is applying for college, they may find our chapter of interest. And in particular, how the colleges are caught in this collective arms race that even the most powerful brands like Harvard, Princeton, and UVA, were unable to stop. And then we look and say, well, why can't parents opt out of this rat race? And you could see how, you know, prestigious boarding schools, and we include Hotchkiss, among others, and we look to see where they, you know, funneling their students. And what you can see then is this race to this one door when there are four doors. And just imagine everyone running to the same one door in these 57 particular colleges. And that takes an immense economic as well as psychological toll on both the parents, the students, as well as on the universities themselves.
We are speaking with Maurice Stuckey and Ariel Szrachy. Their book, Competition Overdose, it is available online, and also when you go to our on-demand page, we have a link which can take you to a couple of different places about the book. Now, there's something very interesting that you bring out in this book as well, is we've been talking about the people involved in the competition. The consumer, does have a big role to play in this competition game.
Yes, absolutely.
Because
at the end, we speak about the power of dissent. In a way, we're all locked in this system where the competitive process is just given. And many times we feel that, what can I do to change this? How can I escape the rat race? And what we show is that each and every one of us can do something. We give an example of how you can do it as an individual by maybe thinking, what are the products that you are purchasing? What is it that you're doing? What kind of competition are you advancing? Are you promoting your local market? Are you promoting the local economy? Are you putting a face behind a number? Or are you channeling funds to a competitive machine that might undermine the other values that we should promote in society? So even as individuals, what you choose to buy, what you choose to do with your money, can have an impact on the type of competition. You can award and reward ethical behavior. And one of the things we try to highlight is that competition is often good. Sometimes it backfires. But even when it is good, it does not necessarily deliver the ethical values that we want to promote as a society. And this is why we cannot use competition as some sort of a value that overtakes any other values. It has to be a value that is considered alongside other values.
Well, just look at the competition with PPEs in the United States of America, where the government has states bidding against one another, competing against one another for supplies that should be equally distributed to everybody.
Exactly. So we wrote the book before the coronavirus, and then it's come out during the coronavirus. But some of the things that we found, there are two important lessons that we found in our book that apply to the coronavirus. First is the arms race that you identify, where, you know, Governor Andrew Cuomo says it's sort of like eBay, where you have all these states competing against one another. And that might work well for art and antiques, but it doesn't work well when doctors have to decide who gets to breathe and who doesn't get to breathe when these respirators are then being bid. And the second important lesson that we draw from our book and we find in this crisis, it's important to know what competition can and cannot deliver. So competition can deliver an efficient outcome, but not necessarily the most resilient supply chain. It will not ensure that we have enough respirators. It won't ensure that we have enough hospital garments and the like. And the other thing is, competition cannot ensure what we all need, and that's one of the freedom of want, if we go back to FDR, and an ample security net. So that competition will not ensure that those people that have tried hard but through no fault of their own have come up short, that there's an adequate safety net for them. And that's an important role of the government. And we sort of have lost that in this neoliberal ideology that been imposed upon us for the last 40 years.
I have one more question that you can both take a shot at, and I would think that I'm especially the part of your book that interests me, the deregulation and regulation. That has also changed what competition has mean, and in the big picture around the world. Would you both agree with that?
Yes, I can give you maybe a perspective from Europe, and Maurice can maybe give a more U.S.-oriented perspective. Sometimes, because markets do deliver, they provide a really attractive avenue for policymakers and politicians. And what you find, especially here in the UK, is that the government will often just say, let us outsource our problems, instead of having something where the state takes responsibility over something. Let the market deliver. And because we trust in the market, let's deregulate. Let's have the market powers just yield all those magical efficiencies. And sometimes it works. But we go through different industries and we show that sometimes the markets just cannot really deliver. So the combination of competition and deregulation can work, but you can see, Maurice gave the example of the COVID-19, there are many other examples. You can certainly see that if your assumption is that competition can replace a certain function by the government, even a minimal one, that protects us, protect other values, and make sure that competition is done within a certain boundary that is ethical and positive, then you really have to make sure that boundary is there, that there is some protection and some limits on this natural dynamic of competition.
And I will give you the final word, Maurice.
Yeah, so one of the things is that, the theme from our book is that competition often works, but it doesn't always work. And so the belief is that whatever the problem our society has, we can throw competition at it. And if competition is ordinarily good, and if it's a natural organic force, then let's remove any sort of regulatory scaffolding so we can allow the full benefits of competition. And that could work under very limited circumstances. But more often than not, what our book points out is that, number one, competition can deliver at times, but it needs regulatory safeguards to ensure that competition is actually working for us and not against us. And that, second, competition should be something ennobling that brings out our best rather than our worst. And I think we've lost sight of this. And with the coronavirus, I think it gives us an opportunity to say, well, what sort of competition do we want? And is the competition that's being peddled to us actually the noble type of competition that you identified, Marshall, or is it more the toxic forms of competition? And those are the questions that we should be asking our policymakers.
Well, once again, folks, the book is Competition Overdose, How Free Market Mythology Transformed Us from Citizen Kings to Market Servants, Maurice Stuckey and Ariel Israchi. I want to thank you both for joining us today, and much success and in spreading this word in the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.